Up next, American cryptids in pursuit of the elusive creatures. Two special guests, Kenny Irish and Stacy Brown. For the first half of this hour, Kenny Irish will be with us, then Stacy joins us, and then both of them will join us for phone calls next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Like I mentioned, we have two special guests for you. Our first is Kenny Irish back with us, also known as KW, author, musician, marketing professional with a lifelong love of monsters, UFO stories, writing and public speaking at writers groups and various other platforms across the country. He continues his journey focusing on both fiction and nonfiction. KW is also a researcher for the New York Bigfoot Society, co-host of the NYBS radio show as well. Kenny, welcome back. How are you?
I'm fantastic, George. Thanks for having me back on. It's always a pleasure.
How did you get interested in cryptids?
Oh, boy. I just I grew up in northern Vermont and right next to Lake Champlain, and I just loved Godzilla and King Kong and monsters like that. I was about four or five years old, right around that age range when I think it was like my aunt's friend or something said, you know, Godzilla lives in Lake Champlain, right? And I was like, what are you talking about? And then that's when I first heard about Champ, the Lake Champlain monster, and hooked. I was hooked from there on. And so right around 4 or 5 years old was when I really, really got hooked and just dragged into the craziness of cryptids.
I got the bug from the Loch Ness Monster when I was a kid and the Abominable Snowman in the Himalayas. I did not know that much about Sasquatch until years later when I realized there's another creature here like the Abominable Snowman who has brown hair instead of white hair. And then I got hooked on that too.
Yeah, it was funny because I'd heard of Sasquatch, growing up, but my understanding was there was one and it was just running around all over the world. Other than that, I never really heard a whole lot about it. And then my senior year in high school, I was one of the classes I was taking. It was called Gothic Tales, and they ended up doing a segment on monsters and cryptids, and that's when they played like the Patterson-Gimlin footage. Yep. And everything. And that's when, you know, I started looking into it more and more because, you know, for me, it was always just kind of like, you know, the whole Champ thing where there's just one in Lake Champlain, you know, I never really looked further than that. You know, I heard, you know, different stories, but it wasn't until I was probably 17 or 18 before I really, really started, you know, diving into Sasquatch.
You have sent us a video that we've got posted at coasttocoastam.com right under your name and Stacy's name of some basically heat-censored video of what could be a Bigfoot. And you've got to really stare at it for a while and just watch it through its whole length. It's not that long. But you will see a creature that looks like Bigfoot in shadow form going by. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the first time that I came on the show with you, one of the questions you asked me was, what's the best evidence you've ever seen? And I remember, like, that's what even to this day, it's that thermal image. But I'm going to, you know, Stacy's the one that got that footage with his dad, so I don't want to go too much in it and ruin it.
Since you've been doing this, what is your take on Sasquatch? What do you think this creature is?
Boy, I'll tell you, if you asked me a year ago, I'd tell you something different than I'll tell you now. It seems like the more I get deeper into it, the less I understand. And, there's so many reasons why it could be flesh and blood, and there's so many reasons why it could be extraterrestrial. And even potentially interdimensional. You know, I never thought I'd actually hear myself saying that, but I've gotten to a point where I've talked to so many credible people that it's just I can't stand the flesh and blood side as much as I used to. I'm like 50% flesh and blood now, where before I was probably 90-95%. So it really comes down to, you know, a lot of the folks who I've talked to, and the more that I dive into it. Plus, the other thing is I don't want to draw a line in the sand and say I stand on one side of it, because as somebody who researches the phenomenon, I feel like I'm kind of like doing the subject a disservice, as well as not really being a researcher if I already have my mind made up on what it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does. It really does. And besides talking to people about this, what is kind of pushing you in that direction, that it's a possible interdimensional or ET?
Well, in the back of my mind, I've always considered it to be extraterrestrial, because extraterrestrial can be flesh and blood. But I'd say it's just a lot of the reading that I've done as well. Again, when I kind of started to step away from the, you know, hey, it's 90-95% flesh and blood, when I started stepping away from that and kind of looking into other publications, other documentation, in reading it, and then, you know, the people that wrote it, you know, following up with those individuals, you know, researching them to find out kind of where they come from and what they're all about. Because sometimes, you know, to be honest with you, what I found is sometimes when you research the individual that's made the claim, you can kind of find out.
Sometimes you can.
So, and, you know, I've come across some very, very, you know, credible people that really had no reason to even say what they were saying, and you know, how they were living their lives. So, you know, it's really kind of pushed me kind of in an area I was kind of concerned about going into, because when you feel like you've kind of got a handle on it, it's kind of okay to move forward with it, but then it's one of those subjects that the second you feel like you've got an answer, now you've got 10 questions, you know, added on top of that answer. But that's also what keeps me going in this, is I love the mystery. I embrace the mystery of it, the legend of it, and it, you know, for some people it's a matter of, you know, seeing one and being able to, you know, for some people, even communicate with them. For me, it's really the legend behind it and the mystery behind it that's really intrigues me.
Kenny, would you say that George Lucas's Star Wars, that Chewbacca, looks exactly like a Bigfoot?
You know, it's funny, because I remember when I was talking with somebody who they had mentioned that they had an encounter with an extraterrestrial themselves. They had mentioned that Sasquatch could very well be extraterrestrial, based off of Star Wars. I mean, and I'd never even put that together. I'd never even thought about it until they had said that. They're like, of course they're extraterrestrial. Look at Chewbacca. They're like, doesn't he look like a Bigfoot? And I was just, my mind was kind of like blown. It was one of those moments where I'm just like, oh, you know, I never even put that together. But, yeah, I mean, Chewbacca looks just like what, you know, most people claim to see. It's the same thing with, like, you know, like, for instance, like Dogman. Some folks say that they believe Dogman is extraterrestrial, which, you know, I guess it very well could be.
Does anybody ever associate craft in the vicinity with Sasquatch?
Associate what? I'm sorry?
Craft, a flying saucer in the vicinity.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a lot of the time there's a report of some type of craft that's in the in the sky, some type of extraterrestrial looking, if you will, spacecraft in the distance. Some folks have actually claimed that they've seen some actually come down onto the ground and seen a Sasquatch actually walk up a ramp and go inside of one. So there have been reports of that.
Tell me your research program. How do you go out and search for this creature?
Well, the first thing that we do with the group that I'm with, the New York Bigfoot Society, is first and foremost, it's, you know, our main objective is to come out alive. So
that would be good.
Foremost, Yeah, first and foremost, we make sure that everybody is trained to above the basics of surviving in the woods and having what they need on with them. Where a lot of folks, you know, I've seen in the past have just kind of like gone out in the woods, you know, with like a couple snacks and some water, and that's it. So our first approach is just to make sure, you know, we've got everything that we need. And then, you know, like many groups, you know, we try to collect data. But with the data that we collect and the information that we collect from our findings, the only thing that we will bring back will be something that we can't explain away. The other method that we use is we use a lot of animal behavior in the woods, because animals in the woods will tell you a lot about what's happening in that time frame. For instance, we've put up trail cams before, and we've put food out, and for 2 weeks nothing touched the food; it just sat there, and then we let the trail cams up, and 2 weeks later we came back and all the food's gone. There's animals on the picture. So we also try to follow animal behavior and try to find patterns within them being present and when they're leaving, because obviously there's something there that's an alpha predator that's making them stay inside and not want to come out. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a Bigfoot, it's a Sasquatch, it's a Dogman, or anything like that. It could just be a bear. But it still gives us an idea of when to go back into the woods, look for different patterns, and try to see, you know, if there's anything to those patterns and why those animals would be hiding and what they would be hiding from.
How many books do you have out now, Kenny?
Right now I have three are out. So I've got one called Stanley Riker and the Bigfoot Runaround. That was released in 2020 through Dark Moon Press. Mm-hmm. That is actually a young reader's chapter book. It's about three friends that go to a camp for the weekend, and the camp counselor tells them that, hey, you know, there's been some Bigfoot sightings in the area, and due to that, they could potentially have to close the camp down. So the three third-grade young friends, they just go out on a mission to try to come up with, you know, proof of the Bigfoot and capture it and save their camp. So that was in 2020. And then American Cryptids in Pursuit of the Elusive Creatures released this year in March, and has done phenomenal. It hit number one as a bestseller twice on Amazon, and it just covers all 50 states. Basically, each chapter starts out with some history on the state, mm-hmm. and then goes into like Native American lore and how the Native Americans in that state lived, and then it goes into like whatever the popular cryptid is of that state. Like, for instance, if it's West Virginia, it's the Mothman. And then each chapter closes out with a Bigfoot sighting that I was able to obtain from the state. And so it covers all 50 states in that manner.
Why do you think science is not pursuing this? You would think they'd be all over this story.
Yeah, you know, I'm just wondering if they're not allowed to yet. You know, it's just a little over a year ago that, you know, it's UFOs are now being considered as realistic, where, you know, before it was just kind of, it was weather balloons, and you know, now the government's saying that, you know, UFOs exist. So I don't know. I have to think that, maybe they're not allowed to pursue it at this point. I don't know.
Is that what your gut tells you?
Yeah, a little bit. To a degree. I think, you know, there's more going on than, let's say, and I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, but at the same time, in this subject, I have to think a little that way. I do believe that, you know, there is something going on, and the government does know about it, and I think at some point in time they're going to be able to possibly allow science to actually say that, you know, this phenomenon is real.
We don't hear anything negative about Sasquatch or Bigfoot. We don't hear anything in terms of them attacking people, killing people. I don't hear that. Do you?
No. The only I mean, I've heard, you know, of some encounters, but they're normally trying to get away. It's normally not a, you know, like any type of violent act. Again, I have come across some, and I do have some in my book, but for the most part, they're usually, you know, trying to kind of get away or get out of the area. The majority of when I hear of any type of encounter being violent, it's usually like a dogman type of encounter that seems to be it seems to be the norm when talking with individuals who believe, you know, that they didn't see a Sasquatch, that they actually saw a dogman.
One of the great stories that I got, Kenny, on this show was during Open Lines a couple of years ago, where an individual was out fishing in the woods with a little river creek, and he stumbled across what he said was a Sasquatch about 10 feet away from him, looking directly at him. And this guy had caught two trout, and he's holding them in his hands, one in each. And the Bigfoot is staring at the fish. And the guy went, "Oh, my God." So he gave them to the Bigfoot, and the Bigfoot took them, looked at him, and gave him one back. I love that story.
Yeah. No, that's awesome.
I mean, that tells you that if that's a real story, that the creature has some kind of thinking power behind it.
Well, you know, a lot of the information that I've gathered and research I've done has been based off of, you know, what the Native Americans have passed down from generation to generation. And, you know, a lot of the tribes, you know, some did have some not so good run-ins according to their history, but a lot of them, you know, said that they lived in harmony with them and they lived beside them. So I have to believe that, you know, there was definitely a time where interaction was more common than it is nowadays. I mean, now it's we call it an encounter, and it's usually a 5-second sighting, where when you research on the Native American side, I mean, they lived side by side and in harmony with them. So I would have to believe that there was sharing going on.
I could see that happening, the side by side living arrangement.
Yeah,
that could probably be. Do you get many stories of little babies? Bigfoot babies?
You know, I don't. I've heard a few, but not really. You know, they're very far and few in between. I probably would say in the last, let's just say 5 years, I've maybe one, if at all. Definitely not a lot. I definitely have not had a lot of those reported to me.
Where do people get the book American Cryptids?
Oh, they can definitely jump right on Amazon and just look up American Cryptids. They can look up Kenny W. Irish either way, and you know, just go right on there and you know, buy the book. You can get the electronic version of it, or you can get the paperback sent to you.
Kenny, we're going to bring in Stacy Brown, and then I'll bring you both back for phone calls in just a moment. So just stay with us here. Kenny Irish has been our special guest. His co-researcher is Stacy Brown. We're going to bring Stacy in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. If you get a moment, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Look at the thermal imaging video that we've got from Stacy that his father took some time ago. And you've got to watch the whole thing. It's not that long, but you will see a glimpse of some creature going by. It's there. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines with Kenny Irish and Stacy Brown, whom you'll meet in just a moment as we talk about American cryptids. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Stacy Brown Jr. with us, filmmaker, scump ape researcher. Now, while watching Unsolved Mysteries in the early 1990s, Stacy came across a segment on the Florida skunk ape and immediately became fascinated with the thought of a hairy monster running around the woods of his neighborhood. Over the next 31 years, he would dig through the libraries for information, speak and hundreds of eyewitnesses, and even spent countless hours in the swamp in search of the creature. Stacy, welcome to the program again.
How you doing, bud?
I'm doing fine. Everything good with you?
Yes, sir. I couldn't complain if I wanted to.
Perfect, perfect. Tell me about the thermo imaging video your dad shot, which we've got up on the Coast to Coast website right now. That is truly remarkable because you can see something that lumbers around that looks like a Bigfoot very quickly going by.
Well, it was a Tuesday evening. My dad had just beat cancer, and he kind of got over the surgery and everything and wanted to go, you know, to the swamps, go camping. It was, I guess, more or less a way for me and him to bond. So he called me up when I was at work, and he's like, I'll come pick you up. We'll go out, you know, camping and squatching, but we were just mainly hanging out, you know. And we went to Torreya State Park. It had rained probably about an inch and a half that day, you know, just kind of like a light shower all day. And around 12 o'clock, we were, you know, cooking some ribs and had some music on, and we heard a knock. And my dad was a skeptic, you know. To this, it was, like I said, he was just wanting to hang out, more or less. And then we heard another knock, and he's like, ah, that's just the wind blowing the trees together. And then the last knock we heard, there was like a grunt before it. And he goes, all right, well, let's go look for it. So we headed out this trail, and we had our lights off. The thermal, when you look at the video, it's on black hot. So all the, you know, the living things, the heat signatures would appear as black. And that allowed us to walk through the woods because when you were looking at the ground, it kind of looked like there was, like, snow over the ground. So it showed the trail. And that allowed us to walk without any lights on. And so I'm just basically holding on to his back, and I have a little handy cam, night vision, and I'm following him, and we're hearing stuff on the left of us, something running, and then stuff on the right, and we make this turn down this trail where we, you know, heard a little commotion, and we stopped. He said, I think I see it, and it was up on this ridge. And at first he thought it was a raccoon because it was sticking out of one side of the tree. And he watched it for a little bit, and then he thought it was two raccoons because it was sticking out of both sides of the tree. And he stepped forward and I guess kicked a palmetto or something, but made some kind of noise, and this thing shot out and was gone. And, you know, he filmed it. I was filming him, so you get to see his reaction.
Yeah.
You know, becoming a Bigfoot believer right there. But we were a mile out in the woods on a Tuesday. I think we were the only people in the park besides the ranger that lives there. And then the camera went dead.
Oh.
The electronics go dead. We were able to get the footage, but we weren't able to turn it back on. And that's what freaked him out because he realized the thing was looking at him. And we had no lights on. It was pitch black. You couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And that's what freaked him out because it went back the way we came. You know, so we had to go back that way.
Oh.
And,
knowing it's out there.
Yeah, knowing it's out there. Now, the whole time, I had no idea. I knew he was freaking out. I thought it was a big cat because that's my fear in the woods. That's like my number one thing I don't want to run into. And
like a panther or something like that?
Yeah, like a panther. So I was like, oh, man, I don't want to be out here this close to this thing. And so he's like, get your gun, because I always carried a gun with me. And I pulled my gun, and we made it back to camp, but he was ready to tear it down and get out of there. And then when we got back to the parking lot, now, like I said, it's a mile walk out, but it's all uphill. And in Florida, for the most part, it's flat. But this one spot of the state is kind of like hills, I guess like North Georgia, but not as steep. And you could still hear things following us, like tracking us out. So what I assume after it was all said and done is that there were probably three or four of them because, like I said, when we were walking out the trail looking for the thing, you'd hear stuff on the left, you would hear stuff on the right. It couldn't have been the same one.
Tell me about this In Search Of episode that captured your attention.
Yeah, it was. They were showing Dave Shealy's footage. Now, I had, because my dad was into UFOs and all this stuff, and, you know, I knew about Bigfoot. I'd seen the Patterson Gimlin film, and they had one about the skunk ape in the Everglades. Well, I had no idea at, you know, 6 or 7 that there was a Bigfoot in Florida. I thought this was a Pacific Northwest thing. And so I was like, oh, wow, there's Bigfoot in Florida. And then I talked to my granny, and she didn't help me out none. She was like, yeah, you better get in before dark because that monkey man is what she called it. And so it kind of terrified me. But it was something else because I didn't know that we had, you know, the creatures down here in this, you know, part of the country.
Now, you interviewed a forest ranger about the skunk ape, didn't you? The skunk ape.
Yep.
Tell me about that interview.
So, after my dad's footage came out, because we held the footage for like 8 months while Cliff Barackman did an investigation, we wanted somebody from the outside to do the investigation. And I'd seen this guy at the gas station who I went to church with, and much older than me. He was probably in his 30s when I was around 10 or something like that. But so he said, hey, you and your daddy come by the house. I got something to tell y'all. And we went by his house, and, you know, he laid this story on us about there was this fire out in Bradwell Bay in, like, 1998. And he was driving around with another guy, and when they turned a corner, this creature come out on all fours and, like, went right up under the truck. You know, it just happened so quick, I guess. But they ran it over, and he said he killed it immediately, but it was a, he said for all he could think, it was a Bigfoot. He said it kind of had a little bit of a snout, I guess more like a baboon would have. And he said they called it in. Some FWC officials come out, and actually they put the thing in their truck, and then he got called back to their little, like their home base they had there on Helengard Road. And this was a massive fire, so they had all these, like, firefighters from around the country in trying to stop this thing. And he said government officials come down. They were there within an hour or so. They looked at the truck. They made them take them back out to the spot, and then that's basically where he told them that, you know, you got to be quiet. You can't say nothing. Will it ruin you, basically. So he kept the story under wraps. He agreed to tell it to me, you know, with anonymity, so nobody would know who he was.
Hmm.
But he said after he passes, I'm allowed to tell his name and all that stuff.
Why were those so secretive, Stace?
You know, that's what I don't understand. It's what's the big deal if there's a Bigfoot running out there?
But exactly. Or an ape.
You have the forestry is, you know, it's all federal lands. So they got all the logging rights to that. So I don't know if that has something to do with it, because I know if we discover that there's a, you know, a creature out there that's very close to humans, it's possibly got human rights. You can't just go logging down everywhere. You know, you got to know if you're in there, I guess, habitat and things like that. So I always assume it was something like that. But I put his interview in my film I released last year, The Skunk Ape Lives. This film shot up the millions of views on Amazon within 2 months.
Wow, that's amazing.
It really was. I wasn't expecting it. People were telling me they were watching it 5 and 6 times, you know, and I was like, wow, okay. But then about month 5, at the peak of its, you know, of its rentals and all that, it gets snatched off of Amazon.
By whom?
By Amazon.
They took it down?
They took it down. They gave me no explanation. They just said that I wouldn't be able to get it back on, to basically not to appeal. I tried to appeal anyways, and it was just like, yep, it's one of them things.
Was there anything on it that you would have found offensive or anything like that?
Oh, nothing like that.
No.
This is something you play at libraries. The local school here has a cryptid course where they feature my dad's footage, and, you know, they played the film one day. So it's G-rated.
No bad language, nothing like that.
Nothing like that. But the thing that, and I didn't even think of it at first, it was somebody that had watched it, like, you know, they took that down because of that Ranger interview.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't know if I want to go there with like a conspiracy angle on it, but I don't have another explanation.
Somebody might have pressured Amazon to pull it.
It's what it seemed like, you know, because why would you do it? It's got it had like 4.5 stars, 100 and something reviews that were all great, and it was, like I said, it was doing better than any other film I'd made. I was actually shocked. And all my other films are still up, but that one
something.
Had to come down
That's
for whatever
weird.
Reason.
Stacy, compare a skunk ape to a Bigfoot for us. What's the difference?
The difference basically is the closer to the equator, I think, you know, so like our white-tailed deer down here in Florida are smaller than you have out west. You know, it's like Bergman's law. The closer it gets to the equator, the smaller the animals will get. And so I assume it's that. But, you know, that's assuming. At the end of the day, we have these two very different type creatures in this state. And the northern part gets more of a, what they talk about, it's more like a Bigfoot type creature. And then once you get, you know, kind of down in the southern part of the state, central part of the state, you have more of an orangutan-type creature that people are seeing. And are they two different species? I believe they are. And I think the special part about kind of the northern central part of Florida is that you're having sightings of both of these types of creatures, which leads me to believe that there are actually two different species of hominids here.
Are you leaning toward the possibility that it's more of an ape as opposed to the Sasquatch type?
Honestly, after the things I've heard from people, and I really don't know what they are, but I would guess that these are more of an offshoot of an ape than, like, you know, a lot of people are like, the Bigfoots, the Sasquatch, they seem very human-like. These skunk apes, they don't seem human-like. They're most of the encounters are terrifying for the people. It's not like a happy-go-lucky, you just seen it and it turned around and walked off. There's always some type of bluff charge, growling, something like that.
And what area of the country do you think primarily has these? The upper Pacific Northwest?
The Bigfoots or the skunk apes?
I guess both. Skunk apes are around Florida, right?
Yeah, so that would be a southern thing, but they really turn more of into like an ape down once you get to like central Florida. The rest of the country, they tend to have these Bigfoots, these Sasquatch type things, also more dog man mixed in with that. But for some reason, just once you get down here, I guess it's like the Florida panther, it's just a subspecies of a, you know, of a puma. So you have your own creature, it's just smaller, and it's got its own little quirks to it.
What would you say is the weirdest thing that you've encountered, Stace?
Well, besides seeing Bigfoot.
Besides
lights, lights in the woods. The weirdest thing I actually encountered was a ghost that I seen at the Lizzie Borden house.
Really?
Yeah, I was... they're doing a live broadcast for the Dark Zone. I was a cameraman on it, and we were talking, and I was setting my rig up. I had this big vest that I had to wear with the camera and stuff, and there was this lady in, like, period clothing behind all the guys that were there. They were having the meeting. She was just standing there, you know, looking and listening. And I didn't think nothing of it because the night before we had a mock trial of Lizzie Borden. So there was a few actresses going around in the period clothing of back in the day. And then they all left. I turned back around, and she wasn't there anymore. And I asked one of the guys that stopped him, I said, hey, I need y'all to send that actress back to me so I can mic her up. And that's when they were all like, what actress?
Yeah, who?
So I wouldn't be shocked if they come forward tomorrow and told me they were all messing with me, but it blew my mind because I seen her, you know, like I look at anybody else when I meet somebody else. She looked real. She didn't look like a vapor or nothing like that. She looked like a real person. And then you have to ask yourself, it's like, how many people am I seeing on my daily routine that are actually not with us anymore? They're still with us, but they're not living.
You ever think we're going to get this puzzle solved, the Bigfoot skunk ape, and find them?
Maybe not in my time. I think our best bet is going for a disclosure, getting the government to admit, because they do know.
I think so. Now, Bigfoot, of course, is the illusion. The skunk ape has been verified, right?
It's weird because, like, they'll categorize, like, apes that are escaped as swamp apes because they now live in the swamp. So it's not really been verified. There's laws against it, depending on what county of the state you're in, that you can't harm these things. But they're not coming out and, like, hey, we got them out here.
Exactly. Stay with us. We're going to come back and take calls with you and Kenny Iris in a moment.